And welcome to the Dice and Screaming Podcast.
Well, the heck is that? A scalded Sasquatch? Oh my goodness. Somebody call a doctor. All right. So hey,
got too close to the campfire. Burnt the Franken beans.
Oh no. All right. So hey, I'm Randy.
I'm Mike.
And here we are doing another podcast at the end of the year. Yeah.
Yeah, I made it. Life is starting to turn back to normal. They've returned me to the day shift, which has done wonders for my sanity, which is probably radically going to diminish my enjoyable craziness in showtime, because I have been a little loopy these last few. I know those who were listeners may have thought I was on point, but the guy across from me literally saw me like on the edge of unconsciousness a couple of shows ago. I was fighting visibly the urge to just fall right over in mid-show.
Well, that's our podcast. That's the effect it has on our listeners. So. don't take it personally.
The cloaker of gaming podcasts. Just take a nap.
I'll eat you. All right. So, yeah. So
that's when we devour them.
So just a couple of things. We're not going to have an Astro Gallimancer because
the aether has grown thick. It is difficult to view its misty reaches properly.
Well, I love it, man. Yeah, just go with that.
No. We're doing a clean slate start of the year.
So yeah, we're just going to
start. First week of January, we're just going to catch everybody off guard with, you know, first topic of the year, and we're not saying what it is.
Yeah, well, we really don't know ourselves, so don't take it to, we're that high-minded. We're not that organized around here. Come on now.
No, we're doing our usual end-of-the-year retrospective right now, but at the beginning of each new year, we've often, like, taken some time aside to think about direction of the show, lists of potential topics, angles we would like to take in the near future, and new techniques or ideas that we'd like to try out. So in the spirit of that, we're not really nailing our foot to the floor just yet.
Yeah, I've got a couple ideas, but I'm sure Mike does as well, and we'll discuss them. But as it comes out, I went and seen Aquaman on The Lost Kingdom yesterday with the missus. So it was actually pretty good. I was, not that my expectations were, you know, like, oh, this is going to be the worst thing ever, or my expectations were like, it's going to be the best movie ever. I was like, you know what, I'm just going to watch it. You know, just sat down. Wow, it was not only a spectacle, but it was well told from a storytelling point of view of, like, a lot of the lore that has come in the later days of Aquaman. And we're not talking about the Silver Age, because Silver Age Aquaman is not very, there's not a lot there. Okay, just Aqualad and Aquagirl and Aqualass, and you got it. You know where that's going. Yeah, they didn't. Aquaman's an interesting character, and I know that Jason Momoa is everybody's heartthrob right now, but you know what? That he really took the bull by the horns on this role, and yeah, first few minutes, like, I'm Aquaman, and I talk to fish, and I know that makes me a joke, but I don't care, because I kick ass. Beating up a deck full of pirates on the high seas.
Physically, I am built to withstand the pressure of, like, the bottom of the ocean. So, yeah, come at me, bro. So, like, most of you haven't done the physics, you don't know what that means, you're about to find out.
But, you know, that was a good way to
You can hit me with a Sherman tank, like, physically, pick up a Sherman tank and hit me with it, and I'm going to get back up afterwards. But I can't even do that to you. Like, all my punches are pulled because I can implode you.
Break. But I just wanted to say that as an end cap to this year, it was actually pretty mellow. So I wanted to kind of go with that. It's like, you know, our expectations for this are very low. We don't have.
Yeah, I mean.
So we're going to cover some ground here.
Not just because it's a DC product, okay? It's a superhero movie in the late 2000 era. The 2020s have not been good to the superhero genre.
No.
We experienced the huge crescendo of, you know, Marvel and DC products.
Sounds like Strong Bad should be narrating this part for you. You know, sometimes you just gotta, you know, just go with the crescendo.
That's right, the crescendo. And then the crash. Well, you know, the crash was, I honestly going to hand that one off to Marvel, which was they, much like the moment in time where WOTC Hasbro started pushing the high-speed magic releases. Just bam, 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 bam. This is a speed bag, and your wallet is what we're punching. That is what Marvel began to do with superhero movies, is that, like, no, like, literally, every 30 to 60 days, here's another one, another one, another one, another one, another one, another one. These are not the blockbusters of summer that we've all been waiting for anymore. These are, like, basically just a hive of bees flinging themselves at us.
Well, with the streaming service, I would definitely say that, yeah, you got the 30 to 60 day cycle down pat. But...
And it became exhausting. So now, you know, we all have guarded reservations about, but I'm so happy to hear that that was a worthy watch.
You know, no big spoilers, but if you liked Wrath of the Lich King, you might like this movie and come to understand that Frozen Throne wasn't just from World of Warcraft. So anyway, that's all I'm going to say on that. Enjoy yourselves. It's a great movie. And I want to just say that it was a great way to end the year for me as in the entertainment. And it kind of coincides with what we've been through. And so just jumping right into it, I want to take just a moment aside. We put a new, we finally got from Spotify the interaction feature. Been fighting with these guys to put it up for a little bit, and apparently it's been up and I just missed it for the last month and a half now. But, well hidden. Yeah, I just go on there, you know, click a few buttons and do my editing, and then after I'm done with my editing, I put the podcast out in the wild. Well, we have polls now, and you can also tell us what you think of the episode, and... Yeah.
Welcome to our first actual poll that isn't just done on over the podcast itself. We no longer have to vocalize it. Like it's plugged right in to Spotify, right to our podcast page. You can select the answer that you identify with. Which I still feel like it's a pretty cool tool, and a lot of other people have had access to it and made use of it before us. We envied them from afar, but now we're totally able to do that.
Yeah, no, I feel bad that I was kind of harrying them, like, hey, what are you going to give me the interaction tool? You guys it's right there, dude.
You did better than me, dude. I mean, like, I'm the Luddite who's out, like, smash the mills. I'm one step removed from being Amish. Like, you're lucky I'm not riding the neighbor's horses into work.
Yeah.
It is a fine day today. Allow me a moment to tend my beard after my journey, and I will begin the day's labors.
Dude, you just need to play a beard druid. That's all there is to it. You just need to have a druid.
I'm that close. I am so freaking close. Sorry. Modernity and I do not get along well, but the druid.
So we've had... Yeah, pretty much no feedback on our end of the OGL, and I can't blame you because basically we got off pretty to a rough start on that one and drifted. But I do want to say that that was the biggest story I think I've seen in 20 years. I mean, even more than going from third edition to fourth edition. This has generated a lot of stuff, so I think it's time for a part two of that. So because we had a lot of stuff. That we wanted to talk about outside of the main points. And I think one of the big things that has been the story where we try to do a year-end synopsis, we're just going to have to land plane on this one. The OGL, how Hasbro, I mean, it's been a hell year for Hasbro. It literally has from Kyle, Blankenship? Guy they sent on the apology tour, Kelly from Mail.
Yeah.
Gary Jackson, all right, son, I'm not gonna level with you. This is gonna be tough. They're gonna eat you alive out there. Yes, sir, Mr. Jackson. I'm gonna do you proud. That's right. I founded Hard Eight Enterprise on the roll of the dice, and I'm gonna be darned if I'm gonna let it go down without a fight. Now get out there, Kelly.
Yes, Mr. Jackson.
Get out there and give him hell.
No, I got to admit that that was a bit harsh to send the intern. He's an unfamiliar face. He has no animus built up against him yet.
Well, he was in the room. I mean, that is the one thing. He was in the room when these decisions were being talked about.
Yes. So. Fling him into the waters like chum. Allow the sharks to eat him. And when they are full, then we shall dip our toes in. When they are sated with the flesh of our underlings.
But yeah.
Oh, man. I made that sound terrible.
You did. That went darker than I needed it to. But can we just dial it back just a little bit, buddy? Yeah. Kyle Brink did not deserve to be treated the way he did. But, you know, also he put his foot in his mouth as much as anything else. And it was just, it was a horror show.
Well, he was not given a great script. I'll say that.
Yeah, they didn't really send him up. I mean, he did, to be his credit, he did weather the hard questions. I mean, they did put it up to him, but, and a few of them, I think Bob the World Builder took him to task. And I think Ginny D also asked him some very pointed questions. But yeah, it's been a year for hell for Hasbro Wizards of the Coast. And we talked about it at length last episode. You can catch that. Don't worry, we're not going to.
Yeah, we're not going to redo the whole thing from scratch.
We're just going to talk about some things that come up out of the side of this. I mean, how it's affected the industry, we didn't get to talk too much about. We talked about Tales of the Valiant and MCDMs. That's Matt Colville's role-playing game. Is coming out with one, of course, Green Ronin.
Is, the upcoming arrival of Candela Obscura, which is based on materials that are already familiar to many gamers.
Right, there are other worlds. Daggerheart is the role-playing game that Darrington Press, Critical Role, are coming out with. And this is some big news. And the reason why the OGL, the revocation is in, if you look at that poll, I'm just going to, spoiler alert, I'd like you all to just go there and do it fresh. But I'm just going to cast the kimono aside, fling it hither and say, look, the revocation of the OGL is the hard one for me because at the core, when Wizards acquired TSR and they put TSR back on right, they righted the ship, you know, they took it into dry dock and got it all prissied up and fixed all the holes. And they refloated it and they started it with the right project, the third edition. Whether you like it or hate it, it did well. And they opened up the doors for everybody to get on board with this one. It wasn't just a walled garden anymore. And I think that is the most encouraging sign ever. Now, some people went with it and did things that maybe you wouldn't have done or I wouldn't have approved of. But that doesn't matter. It was out there. It was a creative license. It had safety rails on it. It had safeguards. But they then went to the fourth edition and they tried to change it with the GSL. And that didn't work, so they went back with the OGL and just said, hey, you know, let's all get together. And
well, there are a number of things in the 4th edition that all were non-sellers, okay? One, I do not think the world was ready for, like, how can we radically reduce the involvement of a DM in the game, you know, which conceptually was not a great tack to take. Number two, how can we divest ourselves of the OGL and move to a product that we can monetize more aggressively and retain like near total IP control over. And that didn't work out well. But then throwing in the favorite comment of you, which was the seemingly aggressive rejection of any criticism. Like the problem is clearly you. The customer sucks. Like what we need is a better class of customers because you clearly don't know what you like. Like you're not real gamers unless you're loving this product that we're putting out now. Oh, okay. I see where we're going with this. Screw you. We will never use it. And in fact, we will go out of our way to advocate for other people to use anything except this. So you declare war on us. You got what you wanted.
Well, remember a few years ago, McDonald's tried changing their menu around, you know, and then they tried to be a little bit more up class.
They got smart this time. They did the Cosmix. Okay. They spun off a second brand.
Right.
And that is where we're going to do our weird stuff. But you know what? People did not want that in a regular McDonald's. They wanted to go there and know what they were getting.
That was what McDonald's was. I mean, you watch that movie about Roy Kroc that's out with Michael Keaton.
No, yeah, Ray Kroc.
Ray Kroc. I'm sorry. Yeah, what's he after? The taste that when you go from one place to another, yeah, one place when he was starting the franchises was selling fried chicken. Another one's like, oh, my customers really like fried chicken. It's like, yeah, but we're from McDonald's. We don't sell fried chicken. You go across the street for that.
Yeah, you're basically competing with three other fried chicken outlets.
We want to be, this is what we want.
The burger joint.
Yeah, we want burgers. We want to serve it fast and right now. And anyway, that's the experience you want. And when D&D, you want experience points. You want levels. You want class. You want kind of those weird systems from yesteryear. You want to kick in the door and take the treasure. Okay, and maybe you can, and you don't have to play that way with D&D. You can play it as any way you want. But there's a basic expectation. Like, I'm going to kill monsters and make saving throws in here, aren't I? Yes. I'm in danger. Yes.
You know, it's a toolkit. Okay. It doesn't come finished. Okay. This modules may be presented to people. Campaign settings may be presented to people. But it is a toolkit that is being handed to the players and DM. That is what it is. It is a toolkit for the imagination. And when you lose sight of that and you think of it very narrowly as like, this is a completely finished product that should not be altered in any way.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you have lost the thread badly. You literally do not get what gaming is. The people who move in that direction or think that the gaming should be like that are absolutely... Look, there's very little I have ever described in the history of this like 300-plus episode podcast. There are very few things I've said like that is truly the opposite of gaming. That like they got it wrong. You're literally doing it wrong. I think at this stage, I'm notorious for not defining things in that way. But this is the one. This is the one thing where, dude, you got it's so simple. There's so many things you can do and still get this right. How did you find the only thing that literally is not gaming? Okay, so, and I saw this.
It's a task.
This broke out online like a week ago. Somebody was like, rules as written, everything must be absolutely as it is. And they were having that little mental breakdown. And, like, I actually had to just do the old man thing that I hate doing. I had to go in there, you know, and swing my... I had to swing my dice around.
Start beating with your dice bag.
The hoary bearded elder has appeared and said, "It's like I don't know how to tell you this, kid, but way, way back in the day, in the very first books, all of that was homebrew. That was, we played this at the table last month. We tested this out a couple of times. We liked it. We're putting this in the next white box book. Okay? The old book editions and all those spell names that have wizard names in front of them. Those were people who played the game. That was their character. And the character wrote the spells. And they said, DM, I wrote this spell. I came up with this. Is this level appropriate? Okay. Make it a level higher like that. That'll be an eighth level spell. But yeah, okay, that's going to be okay. And then that stuff wound up in the Player's Handbook, and then later the Unearthed Arcana. These things emerge holistically from the process of play. It is intended to be a game where the experience that you are having influences the actual mechanics and process of play for the game itself. It is a game of creativity. And if you are not prepared for a game of creativity, you may have picked the wrong hobby. Just throwing it out there. I'm not saying this is the only way to game and you must do this. But if you are literally radically opposed to the entire core concept of the game, like from its origin, this has been like a part of what it is. If you hate that and that is not a thing you think is acceptable at the table, go away. There are other things like ping pong has very good structure, very clear rules, very approachable. Go play ping pong because there's no variation. We're not adding sudden changes to the rules. Like, oh, we could add an LED ping pong ball. That'd be cool. Yeah. Have fun with it. Like, there are other things
out there. Under black lights?
Yeah.
We like use, you know, fog strobers.
Exactly.
I mean, that would just like a whole new level of ping pong.
Go make that rock.
Death metal ping pong.
But
stoner rock.
Yeah. There is very little you can do to screw up TTRPG.
Right. And they found a way.
They found it.
They found a way, didn't they? So, yeah, they did. It's like, well, and more to the point, I think that I want to build on with you is that you raised a good point. What did we do back in the day? We changed the rules.
Yeah.
If there was something we didn't like, we would do the same thing by process. We would play it out a few times, get some feedback from the guys at the table, like, hey, does this new way of doing combat really screw anybody over? Anybody feel like it hurts them? You're not having fun? Oh, I'm having more fun? Okay, well, then that's what we're going to go, is we're going to do more fun.
Yeah, might be a perfect example. I didn't have a huge number of objections to the second edition, except that, like, I had shown up and was just getting my sea legs under me. Like, I was just getting really good at first edition.
Yeah.
And knowing what I was doing with a team of players in high school, I felt like, yeah, man, I'm nailing this. I finally got this right. I was so clumsy just a couple of years ago. And what? I got to buy new books.
Yeah.
This is not how it's played anymore.
Yeah. But very
the
little
third edition. I had a harsh moment where, like, fighters are effectively blind. Despite the guy who goes into combat, you do not have the ability to detect anything going on around you that is unseemly, and you're basically just a walking, like, exposed pair of kidneys for the nearest backstab. You do not have the ability to spot anything wrong going on around you. You have no honed senses of any kind. It is just, I hit the thing with the sharp thing. That is your job. I did not like that.
Good, because then you shouldn't have liked first edition when the guy made his hide in shadows and moved silently, got behind you. And, you know, what am I? Just, I don't have any eyes. I just came up behind me, just backstabbing. Yeah, that's just what happened. They made their move silently and hide in shadow. They were hidden in shadows.
Yeah, they had a series of roles they had to undertake to pull that
so
off.
Did they to get into stealth and hiding. And
but now that. They did it in a single round. Like, you know, if I step into their
you were ambushed. But, you know, hey, you know what? In the heat of the moment, battle reports often are filed, and that's why when we give out CMHs before.
Well, and yeah, I noticed very quickly that
there's a process.
Yeah, I should. This will go back to something I mentioned quite a while back: is that the people I showed up to play with had been playing for a while, and this guy was DMing a group of the most meta power gamers you've ever seen. Their level 3 and level 4 characters were carefully maxed and minned in every possible way. And I noticed within just a few sessions that their entire tactical base was to just hunker down like a Spanish square, or a phalanx, and pelt everything with missile weapons from a safe distance. They did not RP at all. They were not there to be characters. They were there to calculate damage and acquire loot. Were mercenary in their approach, and you upped your game to challenge them. Because
I think we're remembering two distinct things from two distinct perspectives. I was going to say that they did role play, and I made the role play, and more importantly, I began to challenge them on a different level. But to the point,
you got us with the giant mimic.
But that was second edition. Anyway, on to the main point that I wanted. We need to get this car back on the road here we're off in the weeds now. And we're well.
That was an edition war moment.
That's not where we wanted to go. We wanted to hit the point that the OGL was beloved by us because it let other people get on board. And although through the years, the editions have come and editions have gone.
Yeah, change itself is not bad. I have adapted to previous changes, and I should make that as the end point, that I learned to work with each new system as it came, with the sole exception of 4th. 5th, they got a lot of stuff right. They got a few things that I wouldn't have done it that way. I didn't like those either. But at the end of the day, I could not dispute the fact that it was a playable and recognizable version of the game. And they were, at that time, respecting the OGL.
I think
and that... it led to a huge, flourishing environment of active gaming creativity and writing and publishing inside the field. They built, like, this symbiotic relationship with the gaming community. It was great. Okay, what do you think was driving your sales? What do you think pushed that expansion into a wider pool of potential users and players? It was that accessibility and the ability of, like, people in little gamer cliques all over the country to create their stuff, to put it up on DriveThru RPG, to get material out there, published, printed, and then it starts hitting and playing at tables. And wow, we watched this epic expansion take place. It was a thing of beauty. So if it seems like we have beaten the crap out of Wizards/Hasbro this year.
Oh, and we will. We continue to do so.
If it seems like we have, it's only because we actually have the lingering memory of how great what they accomplished was. This is like watching a sports all-star descend into just complete anonymity and failure.
Well, as we come up to the break here, I'll pull you up short for a minute. As we're getting close to the break here, I just want to put a kind of a topper on this one. Look, the Edition Wars aside moment here, I think what in where you're trying to land it, if we can both get on board with this one, is that the OGL at the inception of third edition, the SRD OGL, the standard reference document, which isn't in use anymore, really, but those two helped make the sales of the third edition Hand Player's Handbook, Dungeon Master's Guide, and Monster Manuals flourish. Because they required you to play them, purchase them to play this game. They didn't come out with the stat rules for the system unseen. The OGL was a little different, but it enabled people to put their own spin on things and be more creative with the system. Like, you could do a steampunk setting for third edition. They benefited from this relationship, and they've ruined it again. They found a way to kill the goose that lays the golden eggs, and Hasbro, also what we spent a lot of time talking about last time and not really talking about with the OGL, was that Magic has been paying the bills, okay? And they're messing with that again. Look, they fired a bunch of people, they laid them off, and the two boneheads at top, Cynthia Williams and Chris Cox, they still have jobs.
Yeah.
They talk, well, this was a last-ditch effort. We had a shortcoming of a couple, $100 million. If you guys would have cut some of that fat off, maybe some people who helped with Larian Studios and with the D&D Beyond merger, they needed to be around because they're the ones who really, really did the hard work.
They engineered your actual success. None of your successes are really attributable to how genius the two of you are. It is mostly the boots on the ground that created product that people wanted and built relationships with other genres that people were interested in. And
they can talk about, the toy sales are down. This is down. Look, Mattel still had a great year. So I don't want to hear about all the toy sales are down. It's just how they market them and how they directly. They're spending a lot of time making these high-end action figures like it's the 90s. Look, McFarlane Toys, I get it. They changed the whole scene and caught everybody with their pants down. And they said, we got to make new figures and all this with this joints articulation. Yeah, okay. Those people aren't buying them. Kids want the basic posable action figures we grew up throwing in the sandbox when we were seven, the Star Wars figures. I'm looking at you.
Yeah, we're cringing.
But that's it. That's what they want. And you know what? That's what you can market to people. But you refuse.
Behold the terrible fate of that mint condition. New inbox, Boba Fett.
Because he's taking a header. Bam!
Pa-pow!
Yeah, all right. But, we'll be back. And we would just find out that we're both in agreement on this part, Wizards and Hasbro. More importantly, Hasbro. You guys are terrible this year, and you should be ashamed of yourself. So anyway, we're going to be right back. So stick around, folks.
We're coming back, and we will discuss other things of the year. Bye-bye.
All right. So, we're going to pick up a few things around here, put some bandages on. All right. So, yeah, during the break, we got back on track here. I think we got it sorted out, got it out of our system. So, yeah, as much as we want to pick on the OGL, the other factor is that there's been a rise of new games. And I think it's a little underreported with all the fracas going on about Wizards missteps or Hasbro's missteps.
We gave our intro over to Hasbro WOTC, which was the big news of the year.
Yeah.
Like that was dominating 2023. Yeah, that was them. And our closing opinion, if we were to boil down that news into a single sentence, it would be like 2023 was dominated by endless news going, here's what Hasbro WOTC screwed up today. So now let's talk about some awesome things that happened in 2023 that, you know, frankly, they are less a-hole centric. Okay? less terrible news centric, because I hate doom and gloom. But the exciting thing that Hasbro did for the world was make themselves so toxic that a lot of the creatives out there in other companies fled outwards. Like they cut ties, they severed the umbilical cord, started legally bulletproofing themselves and building their own coalitions, the ORC and other things that will allow creatives to continue to publish in Die 20 style or similar systems into the foreseeable future without being legally liable for sudden takeover or exploitation.
Yeah, Wizards of the Coast decide, or Hasbro Wizards of the Coast decides to say that the term fighter only belongs to them and that anybody who swings a sword is their intellectual property. They can basically go pee up a rope because there's...
Yeah.
Not only legally do they not have any way to stand on, which I think was the core of the OGL crisis at its best, is that, you know, a lot of the companies said, we don't think you have a legal leg to stand on, but you know what? To avoid costly court battles, which you would willfully get engaged in just to bankrupt us and drain our coffers and energy, we're going to go and put our energy where it can be best utilized. And that's where I think a lot of people have went this year. And you're starting to see versus like a kitchen sink approach, which would be like, Pathfinder or... Tales of the Valiant, our 5th edition D&D, which is pretty much throw everything in there as much as you can. There's plenty of room. We'll just move some stuff aside. Yep.
Yeah.
You know, you want... we changed the Githyanki to Astral Reavers or Ythiran, as they're called, and they dwell in the Astral Sea, and, you know, they're led by a vicious creature called the Lich... Duchess, you know, Lich Countess. Doesn't quite have the same as the Lich Queen.
Yeah, but look, there are going to be people who maintain the same core concepts with a slight shift of language. But on the other hand, there are also going to be people who go out and create entirely new stuff.
Yes.
And it is now entirely new stuff that is not connected by a core game system that ultimately leads people back to D&D.
Yeah,
which like is what... That was the benefit that used to be had, is that all of this wonderful creativity out there ultimately fed back to new and arriving players seeking out D&D rulebooks. Well, congratulations. You killed the hell out of that. That's not going to be a problem anymore.
But we get things like
Ronin and other people have been out there making stuff anyway.
They are just like in the day, back in the day when we... Let's roll back the Wayback Machine more than to the turn of the century.
Gosh, Mr. Peabody, are you sure?
Yes. Today we're going to go back to the late 1970s to Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, to one Gary Gygax. Yeah, we're going to go back to there, and we're going to see that, like, in 1977, they began to get very strict and very concise with their rule set. This is the Advanced Dungeons & Dragons set, not Dungeons & Dragons. Understand the difference, plebeian. And they began to really tighten up how other companies did stuff. Like Ardour and Gwemar had been out there for a while, and they were kind of like, yeah, we're looking at you. And yeah, they followed the little brown book format for a while. But Dave Hargrave's basic Ardour and Gwemar was basically house rule for the D&D game. Yep. AD&D made sure to close that loophole. So, things like RuneQuest, Call of Cthulhu, they started to come out. The Fantasy Trip from Metagaming and later Steve Jackson Games.
All of which could be found in advertising in the early editions of Dragon Magazine.
Middle Earth role playing.
Yeah. Constantly, like Iron Crown Enterprises.
Yeah, they were.
There was, let's see, at that time you saw both a combination of staking out individual territory while simultaneously being welcoming to fellow gaming entities.
Yeah, Fantasy Games Unlimited, Villains Vigilante, Space Opera. There was also Dragon Quest.
Oh, yeah. Came out,
and Powers and Perils.
From Dargon.
So you had another wellspring of creativity. And again, just when they went anytime, the big company, the 850-pound gorilla in the room, decides to start stomping around. Everybody runs away, but they come back a little bit bigger, a little bit shaggier than before. The creativity really comes forth when the gorilla starts to assert its territory. Everybody goes out and, like you said, stakes out new areas and claims them. But we've seen an influx of new games like Blades in the Dark. I said that right. Knives in the Dark. I keep wanting to say Knives in the Dark, but it's Blades in the Dark.
Knives Out.
Yeah. I know.
Blades in the Dark, which I believe there is some contention that, like, yes, this is the primary inspiration for Candela Obscura. So, you know, there is
which some love the premise, but I just don't love the game. I love the premise of Candela Obscura. You know what? If I had to take a Call of Cthulhu and scrub all the 1920s and all that off.
And a little hint, there are some whiffs there of classic Vampire the Masquerade, original, like, White Wolf rules. Yeah, you know, I'm seeing some good things that went into the soup that makes Blades in the Dark, and ultimately Candela Obscura. I like what I'm seeing, but it isn't necessarily my favorite type of mechanic.
I like a back and forth combat experience. I mean, that's maybe just the way I grew up playing this game, and way I like it. I'm a little bit more of a war gamer. Oh boy, you talk about the current events. Boy, this has been a banner. I'll tell you what, the last 2 years for war games, they're pretty good. You know, where before it was like, let's replay the 1980s Western Europe again. Okay.
Yeah.
Put a new shot in the arm in that one.
Let's try the seventh iteration of Warhammer, you know, because I had to go buy a whole
new army. Historical war gaming is what I'm talking about.
Oh, historical war
gaming. Yeah, I mean, we can always play the American Civil War, you know, because, you know, I love kicking the hell out of Johnny Reb, but my Sherman side showing.
Salt the earth.
But yeah, I mean, you know, this modern era also has heralded. I'm like, I've also gotten into like stuff like playing Phantom Leader, air combat over Vietnam, you know, and understanding like, wow, this was really tough. It was tough to be a fighter jock back then. Holy cow, this is nuts.
Yeah, and not a great time to be.
Well, the Phantom's a world beater plane. Oh, yeah, it's the best plane in the world. Hands down, electronics, everything. It's fast, it's maneuverable, it's all that. You know what it isn't? But it doesn't have to run through the world's most restricted airspace. You know how many SAMs they get fired at me just flying over? Like, you guys really don't like us down there, do you? I get the distinct feeling that there's a level of hostility here that you're just not.
Wow, so unwelcoming.
You're just not. You're internalizing it too much.
No mint on the pillow.
We do live in a rare.
Different war games made a resurgence in the last couple of years
because of the Ukrainian and the recent tensions at sea. I noticed that a lot of people are coming back and like, can we revisit some of these
war game scenarios in real world, thing, which, by the way, in case we may have touched on this before, but it's kind of a little known thing that, there are things called scenario packets that the federal government, you know, has analysts that develop theoretical series of events for precise areas, precise regions, certain political circumstances overseas, regime change-ups. What do we do in the event that this suddenly happens, 2,000 miles from here? What should our stance be? What should our policy be? How do we predict what impact this will have on the world stage? Many of the people who prepared these analyses for the government had some background in wargaming of one type or another. Mm-hmm. Why? Because there was basically a genuine understanding of that domino effect that does happen. Yeah, we're not. I don't mean that in the Kissinger sense.
No, no.
But there is an impact.
I didn't even think about that one.
One event can then cause a cascade of other events.
Oh,
and no. Understanding that relationship between one single event and a series of others is essential to the task of diplomacy. And that is how gamers have had an actual impact on government.
So yeah, now I don't mean to trivialize.
Here we see a rise in wargaming activity as people try to understand, how do we predict the ramifications of this? That is how wargaming happened. It was training for officers. Okay, all of those miniatures moving and here are the inclement circumstances that occur at random today. And you will now have to move your troops in accordance with that inclement circumstance. Okay.
But yeah, being ancillary to that, it led me into some unique places that I hadn't previously explored through the lens of wargaming. Not that I'm trying to trivialize the sacrifice and valor of a lot of men who fight to defend our freedoms, but also the ones that often threaten it, because you have to understand your enemy a lot of times. And there's a lot of good training for that. But there's also, while these have opened up a lot of scenarios where, I had to learn some very hard lessons taught in the past. So, yeah, playing Phantom Leader. Wow, why do I have to play Phantom Leader to understand modern day air warfare? Well, this is where they were. This is where the generals and the guys who developed all the new technology, this is the era that they were fighting in, and they didn't like it. Not one bit.
No, it's one of those interesting moments historically, precisely because you're looking at the advancement of technologies taking air combat in a direction that it had not, into a space that it had not previously occupied. Okay, the challenges were radically different than the challenges just 10 or 15 or 25 years before.
Okay? You're dealing in the jet age.
Leaped forward with the jet age, and those leaps were still taking place. So literally, while you're trying to solve the problem the first leap caused, you're having your second and third leaps. This is the kind of challenge that they were dealing with. It was multilateral comprehensive at the same time. So, it is a fascinating topic. It gets there. But
and it also goes ancillary to the D&D experience. We have to go back and show, the first causes, how did we get a game like Chivalry and Sorcery or RuneQuest or Traveler? Because there not only was room for them, the way that TSR was conducting itself in those early days wasn't really bad, but around 70s, the Bloom Brothers, I think, I agree with Tim Cass, around the Bloom Brothers, it started to get a little
aggressively corporate.
Yeah, they tried to stake out, this is ours. And, other people were like, no, you don't own the fantasy genre.
Yeah, sorry, dude.
And we talk about that.
Nice try, bro.
Yeah. And there were different approaches. Look at how different RuneQuest is. It doesn't have levels. It's a skill-based system.
Yeah, what you're advancing is the skill with which your character can execute certain actions and where you've chosen to invest.
People found out, hey, this feels more organic. They also use the spell point system for casting magics.
Yeah, and spells. You may notice that in the evolution of video gaming, more than just the D&D system have gone into it.
Oh, yeah, the Oblivion Engine an early one was based pretty much off of, our friend Ken Ralston, who basically got into video games. He did use the RuneQuest system because he was right that, this shows the most reward. If you use your bow a lot, you'll probably advance your bow skill up pretty well. Yeah, he was.
Yeah, look, whatever beef I have with Ralston, I'm going to lay that aside.
And the Elder Scrolls, that, he's done well.
Yeah, in the sense that, and you know what? I'm willing to bet anything that he was probably involved in making the goblins in Oblivion, like this ancient god people that can attack 30 rounds per second, you know. And yeah, like, have you ever hit that exact level?
Yeah.
Threshold?
Yeah.
Like, there's a certain moment where goblins go from being one-shot punks that you can kill, and that lasts for, like, this little Goldilocks period of, like, four or five levels. And then, for whatever reason, like, the game has no middle ground. They don't get
what are they called in Skyrim? I know them down in the other... Man, those guys are mad. Those are badasses.
Yeah.
You don't want to take on more than just a couple at a time.
Right. You really honestly need a mechanic whereby which you can just nuke the whole region from orbit until the goblins
are Astrodome!
Because, like, post-Oblivion, those little suckers, you get to about level 8 or 10, and they turn into monsters of the most ferocious nature.
Well,
and the other ones were bears. And bears. So my theory is that, like, they are the two proto-races that existed at the dawn of the world. And they formed the greatest civilizations, which is why they have near godlike power. And it was a battle between the goblins and the bears that wiped them both out and left them in the rubble.
Should really write this.
Today.
You should really write this down. I think this, you might get some.
Which, you know what my
this
solution was?
This would make a great Reddit thread.
You know what my solution was? If I had a large group of goblins outdoors, I would piss off a bear and then run towards the goblin camp. At just enough pace to make sure it stayed with
me. Sorted out, they'll figure it out.
That's exactly. They're natural enemies. They're natural animosity to one another. Would then
so,
solve my problem.
Yeah, talking about from air combat to the god level of goblins and bears in Oblivion, we're here to talk about how the various types of other expressions of gaming came out of the need and necessity to be different than D&D, which was a kitchen sink affair. Where you could just include anything. So how do you get away from a system that has literally everything in it? Well, you have to be very specific. And I'll be honest, I think the best expression of that was Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay. Now, let's remove the Games Workshop connection from it. Just for a side, look at Evens as We Had Her. It still is like a love letter to D&D. I remember that review. It incorporates parts of RuneQuest and the mechanic systems, at least. But yet, it still has that core central ethos of it's a grim, dark world, and you're going to probably die horribly in this game. But
the odds are not good. But while you're here, you're going to make a mark. Then it's going to make a mark on you. Several.
Yeah, it's likely. Called PTSD.
Yeah.
So
I came out of my last Zweihander game with a limp and a stutter.
Oh, your character or you?
Me? Oh. No.
Don't roll the dice.
No, Games Workshop, in its humble origins, like once upon a time, that it was just a bunch of British fellas with a great sense of humor and some big ideas. And they staked out a little space for themselves, homaging.
They made a kitchen sink setting that was very specific. You could not remove the Warhammer world from the Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay system. Now, Zweihander said, hold my beer, but also they pretty much just reskinned the whole thing. They basically said, you know, hey, we're going to keep the ethos of the Chaos Gods.
Yeah, we like the Grimdark, you know.
They got it's a grim, gritty setting where you're a rat catcher with a small but vicious dog. What's the stats for that? Not necessary. It's just small and vicious. Well, does it do damage? No, but it's small and vicious. So when you're attacking that beast man, it's going to be biting his ankles.
Yeah, and making a lot of noise. Like, nothing is getting near your campsite without an alarm going off.
Best character ever, Ratcatcher. can I just create my own advanced class called Skaven Slayer? Yeah, Skaven Hunter. Yeah, you little bastards. You're going to regret the day you came into this city.
Yeah, yep. Rat catcher. Perfectly suited for sewer combat.
Oh, I know. But
I'm Pickle Rick.
Because it seems like everything ended up in a sewer, and it still does. our memorial dungeon, and a sewer runs through it.
If you haven't killed rats as your opening quest or crawled through a sewer, you have missed out sorely on much of
the gaming. But a lot of these games do a great job, and I'm glad to see that MCDM is taking a hold of this and moving forward with their own game system, which is more of a narrative style with, you know, combat as a obstacle rather than a contest. And that is an interesting flex. I'm not sure, and I hesitate to use words like it's an interesting take because it is a flex. I think there's a strength there, and there's with the new generation of gamers, I think that's the natural evolution of how we're going to see combat come through, is that it's going to be less of a, you know, you versus them, as more as a just another obstacle to overcome, like it were a locked door or a trap. You know, it's less about the monster fighting you than you fighting the monster. And that emphasis is an interesting one to take as we go into this new year. And let's be honest here, it's going to be uncharted territory where we go. And not to put too much of a fine point on this, but we're going to be seeing the release of the Starfinder second edition playtest in August. The Daggerheart playtest also hits about the same time. Tales of the Valiant will be delivered sometime this year, as well as I see it, our Matt Coville's game will be out and about pretty soon. The Kickstarter for it, I think, just ended.
Yeah.
So they're doing really well on that. And a number of other games.
Yeah, we have not had a shortage of great product.
Yeah, so it is not, if everybody has been gloom and dooming this and saying, like, oh, it's going to doom the hobby. No. Because I don't think, like, do you think Chaosium really cares all that much?
Every about restriction what creates a new doing? Revolution.
No.
You know, like every prohibition creates a new, you know, black market. And, you know, by apparently trying to, like, we shall take this broom and we shall beat out the flames of that campfire out in the wilderness. Oops. Well, they spread those coals all over the place and now there's a roaring forest fire.
Hmm.
So, yeah. Thank you, Hasbro. Best friends ever.
Right. I mean, I do think to get
you're
back
still
to that,
helping gaming. Just, I mean, you didn't intend to. You were hoping to strangle it in its sleep. No. You're like, yeah, keep it locked in a basement room. Yeah, to tell it how much you love it every day until maybe it loves you back.
Just, ooh, that got dark quick.
Yeah, that is how creepy WOTC Hasbro was. Okay, that is what they were like. That you'll learn to appreciate me after we've been alone for a decade. You know, just you guys, back the fuck off. Like, no means no, and you're having a lot of trouble with boundaries, pal. And what have they done? They have created this flourishing wilderness of awesome new games.
Yeah, everybody's going out and like, hey, I'm going to make my own game with strippers and blackjack. Well, guess what?
Bitches and wolves.
You finally, you know, sometimes it takes a kick in the pants and gets you off your ass. So I think that gaming in the short term, it has hurt the hobby. But I think long term, it's
another growth period.
We've seen this happen before. And that's what we're trying to get at. It's like in an area where just like 4 or 5 years ago, I was just replaying scenarios over and over. There's been a whole new emphasis on wargamers trying to get out there to understand some of the stuff here. Like Mike says, I work in some rarefied circles, but they prepare these scenario packets with an expression in mind, and they want people who are understanding of its material. The other part is that I see that my emphasis on the Chaosium, they have Call of Cthulhu, okay? As much as I love RuneQuest, Call of Cthulhu is the big golden goose over there for them. And you know what? They may care about how the hobby is being presented by Wizards of the Coast and Hasbro. They generally do care about that because it reflects on everybody. But in the end, they also know they can go it on their own. They have all this material that Wizards is trying to pawn off on everybody about the VTTs. It isn't going to fly with them. And it's more of the fact they're just not going to care. They're basically going to give them the middle finger salute. And
which, like, hey, you want to go one step further than VTT? Do what Call of Cthulhu players already have done. LARP. Like, do a murder mystery, a horror murder mystery, with a group of friends in costume on location. It's a thing. Okay. People do that. And why do they do that? Because VTD is like literally lame, passe. Like, oh, I stay here and I click this button and my little thing moves. And I'm home alone. And there's some other people who are home alone. And we'll each make our little thing move. And, you know, okay. Hey. Little video monster appeared. Okay, we each make our move, and then like we all stab the video monster.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm gonna have to stop you there.
There is cooler stuff going on than anything their VTT can do.
They look at it as like we can monetize this at every single level and transaction this.
Yeah.
Okay. You sure can. You can turn it to Raid Shadow Legends, my friend.
Yeah. But you know what? I was about to say. Like 200 lame games that are no longer in existence.
You can do that, but what people are also going to do is what they've been doing even before the VTT is it allows people to get online across the planet at a certain time and have an adventure online. And that you cannot copyright, Hasbro. You right from where we started smelling this out.
The only thing you have the ability to do is to chase customers away if you decide to do so.
Yeah, and
you can reel them in or chase them off.
But we've got a good
your call.
We've got a good new core set of rules and games coming out with various experiences. People are getting more and more focused into niche games, or sometimes they're calling them boutique games like Mork Bork. And I was not definitely on board with it, but I ended up sending it back. This wasn't up to my taste.
Look, not every game is.
Yeah, but it's not because idealism. It was bad. It's just I didn't grok it, dude. You know, it's like
I don't see me using this.
Yeah,
like, I don't see this hitting my table.
Like, you know, I want it to have a good home because this seems like it's written with love and it's well intentioned.
So yeah,
I have no animosity. But that's the whole thing. Is like I can still I will not be mad that there are games out there I won't play. I will, however, be mad at those who make it hard for me to play with other people because they have a very scripted view of how to move and play in these circles. And if you can't handle being with a diverse crowd of folks, then I guess, you know, I'm not going to see eye to eye with you. I like to have...
And that's another thing. Let's, you know, as that has been an issue over, I don't know how much time we've got left.
We got as much time as we need. Just keep going, brother.
Okay. You know, this battle is still ongoing. It has been for like the last 4 or 5 years, especially on the internet, about who and what should be playing. We've discussed gatekeeping in a couple of previous episodes. Look, I made it pretty clear right back at the beginning of this episode that the one thing you can do that is genuinely wrong is to hate the core idea of like a game of the imagination with creativity involved. Like if you really hate that, yeah, you probably should go somewhere else. That's my gate. I'm willing to die on that hill. Everything else is subject to some wiggle room. And I don't want to out-macho anybody on this, but we're iron gamers. Like, we showed up with dice and we didn't care who was there. That meant playing with an incredible array of people. It literally didn't even occur to us to, like, we need to carefully edit this to make sure that I maximize my gaming enjoyment. Because if, like, even one of the wrong people is here, it will ruin my day. Outside of being horrible to the people around you, literally nothing has deterred us from gaming with people. And like open gaming sessions where like you hang a sign at a store and then rando strangers just are at your table each week. Yeah, still there. But, you know, the perception of some that this is supposed to be some kind of rarefied activity, that like only incredibly rare creatures who survive by breathing one of the noble gases and require precisely this atmosphere in which to prosper and survive should be involved in this. Wow. Way to set yourself up. I feel like there's a reason you're online griping about everybody else. It's because you're not playing.
All right. Well, we're going to have to hold it on there, and we'll be right back with some bonus content. So stick around. And we're back. All right. So, yeah, bonus content for the end of the year. Wow. Fitting. Yeah. So, hey, guys, you're talking about the end of year recap. You're talking about a lot of stuff that isn't that. Yeah. Well, you know, we're getting to it. You're here for the ride. We appreciate it. If you made it this far, well, our apologies. But, you know, that's just the way the old cookie crumbles here at the Dice is Screaming. Or the dice tumble out of the dice bag, as it were.
The podcast that is mostly old cookies.
Yeah, that's right. And so, as the year winds down, we're in our last few dregs of the year. We do have a couple things besides the gatekeeping to put out there, which, you know, I think you speak. I speak for me on this one, both of us. I only bring it up because it seems that one of the good things from Hasbro doing all this shenanigans is it's brought the gaming community, for better or for worse, closer together. And, you know, if you're here for gaming, I'm here for you. If you're here for gaming, but you have some causes or you want to talk about some things that are very important for you, also here for you. But when you talk about division and hate and you're just looking for reasons to be angry, yeah, the other trend I would like to see go away is the whinging and constant harping on outrage threads. The rise of the YouTuber, the outrage YouTuber, is well known as the algorithm. It gets you hits, it gets money and clicks.
Yeah, we are happier being small than we would be like putting on fake outrage. Like, we're not going to sit here and like rip our shirts off and beat our chests and explain how the jackboots are coming at any minute to kick down the doors and chase us off, and then perform the same sketch the week after that.
On a different topic with somebody else.
And the week after that. Yeah. Literally, like, it's so repugnant as a behavior and as a media conduct that we refuse. And like, hey, you know, does it get clicks? Yes, it does. Okay, you want to be clicked? You want to be liked? Play that game. And all the people playing it know that. They made that choice just like we did, except that we know what they chose. And sorry, we refuse. We're also, we started this because we chiefly talk about what we love, what excites us in games today, and what was awesome about games yesterday. It is a broad-minded effort to have conversations about stuff that brings satisfaction and friendship and happiness into our lives. And no, in spite of how crappy Hasbro has been this year, that has not really changed our principal drive, which is, okay, yeah, some crappy stuff happened. We're not amused by that. That is not going well. But hey, by the way, here's some stuff over here that is frickin' epic and that we are pretty thrilled
with. Or if everything seems down and out right now, let's look back at the past for a few minutes and line up. I mean, Dungeoneer Survival Guide was a surprising trip for me because I didn't have really good memories about it. No. It's been on my shelf, but I opened it up again and I was like, you know, they came out with a lot of concepts first. Here was the adventure matrix that, you know, all the different types of narratives that you can tell. A sandbox support open-ended approach versus a linear path adventure where you could use a matrix. And you know what? Both are valid.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, oh, I hate the railroad. Well, you're not really looking at what the matrix provides for you because there's more than one option. And
like you're not quite seeing the potential for,
well, there's only one way forward. Oh, that's
there's a limited number of spaces. Well, I'm sorry, we're not in space. And like all 9 points, are, you know, the chevrons are not locked, you know, so like, obviously, okay, I float to like kind of a, you know, north, west, north. But hey, you know, you may have set the bar so high that nothing can ever succeed.
Sure, and a sandbox campaign still goes down. What,
you expect my character to do something?
I love the sandbox. They come out there and they say, well, you know, this is why the sandbox is superior. But yet you always take the same path every time. I mean, so why even, you know, spend all that time developing something if all you're going for is, I'm looking for, look, I need in this campaign some direction. Tell me where the nearest dungeon is and just set my feet on that path.
Okay.
All right. Well, sounds like we're playing a linear game. Don't you dare say that to me, storytelling DM. Okay.
Storycrafting
DM. Yeah, that guy. Ooh. I wonder what he's up to. I haven't thought about that guy in such a long time. What he's doing. What he's up to.
Oh, man. I will give the anti-story crappers one point of credit, which is the less you give the DM in the way of tools, the more difficult it is. The more difficult it is for him to weave those threads around you until you are trapped in them. Shiob's lair. It is a tough break for a DM to have a group of people who are absolutely resistant to any degree of plot. The thing that needed stabbing, it as the name of this adventure. They had it coming.
They had it coming, kid.
We all got it coming, kid.
Unforgiven, the RPG. Except with elves, dwarves, and halflings. Okay.
Yeah. You know, you can make it work. And I'm not going to dog on any of those styles because I've played.
Look, yeah, I love a sandbox campaign because it does feel like I can go wherever and I can do what I want. But you do find yourself getting embroiled in a well-written sandbox campaign in various politics. We were talking about that with Griffin Mountain a while ago. It's that it is a sandbox, but there are many threads. And if you pick up one and you explore it till you're satisfied and you don't want to go any further and move on to someplace else,
within your rights. Yeah,
could you come back and visit it? Maybe. The game master may have said that, hey, that plot has spoiled now. But, you know, with enough work, you could pick the remnants back up and make of it what you will.
You could resuscitate this. Like, this does not have to be the end. Creativity on the DM's part is the essential ingredient
there. Yeah.
Which, I admit, one thing that the gaming companies did have right as a frustration. I understand the frustration with the role of game masters, DMs, referees, things like that. It assumes that at least one person in a group is prepared to take on a responsibility and to be a decision maker. And moving past that and creating games that don't require that, hey, look, as a notion, I understand why that would appeal to you.
Yeah.
I do get it, but you're also losing a vital component. Once you take them out of that role, you also lose the impetus for that much personal creativity. So all of a sudden you have a tabletop template and you might as well be playing Monopoly
sure.
They have board games for this. Like, that, nobody's the actual leader.
Okay. Well, I mean, Gloomhaven took off as well as,
yeah.
I think they got a Frosthaven now, but yeah, I mean, there's adventuring.
You can do it, but a little something is lost in the translation. There may be a niche for it, but, you know, having the engagement with personal creativity, that to me is the wellspring. It's the lifeblood. This is the well we go back to that makes this crazy thing that people have been doing since the early 70s keep coming back. Like, it reiterates, and like the phoenix, it goes down in flames, and then out of the ashes crawls a newly hatched chick, and, okay, guys, let's start over.
Yeah, well, look at BattleTech. I mean, for all, you know, how long has it been around and dogged and kicked around for its, you know, oh, they're just a terrible work of fiction, derivative science fiction. But now people are coming back and they're, like, discovering a whole new world for the first time. And that's what I love, is watching through other people's eyes. Because you get to see it over again from a fresh perspective, just on your nostalgia memories, which nostalgia is the rust of memories. Yes, I know I'm famous for saying that nostalgia is poison, but only if you drink too much of it, you know, a little bit.
We had that conversation, and this is a good reflection moment on previous episodes. It's like, we did acknowledge that, look, if all you do is hammer nostalgia all the time, if that's your intake, and you don't let yourself experience anything new, you ultimately wind up a little bit like Mike the Luddite, you know, Neo-Amish, going, everything new is bad. It'll turn you into that. And I don't want that for other people. I actively work to combat my worst impulses and to force myself to engage with new things and new ideas. I make light of it most of the time. I make the handy jokes about what a curmudgeonly hermit I am. But the truth is that I have engaged in a lifelong battle, like honestly, even since my early 30s. I started actively working to make myself be a participator, to go out there and experience things I haven't seen before, to read stuff I haven't read before, to play games I haven't played before. Why do I do that to myself? Because that is the way to prevent yourself from falling into nostalgia poison hell.
Yeah.
And nostalgia is great. I'm 100% proud to have loved and enjoyed the things that I have. But the smart side of this is that that's not the end of my experiences. Like, I'm not just a dead guy walking. I might as well stay in the easy chair because no new ideas are in danger of attacking me there. I get out. I'm still a part of the world. I am still vital.
You know, as we're swilling the dregs of the year down, I'll put this out there. That I watched a guy play the old Boot Hill game.
Mm.
And, well, they're a little bit of a knucklehead, I feel, on some of their views. But I put that aside just to enjoy the moment of them gaming and having fun. And one thing I came away from it was, you know what, they may be playing an old game and they're having fun with it. But he did have a point that every time you play these games, even though they're old, when you play them with a new group of people or a new scenario, it's different every time. It's like you're experiencing it again for the first time. And can you find another experience from another type of gaming that does that? Because board games and video games, you already know what to expect, you know? You know, you can say, well, this time in God of War, I'm going to do something different when I get that. Okay, fine. You know, do something different. Don't be the evil guy this time. Be the evil demigod. Who cares?
Yeah.
Right? But you still know kind of where this is all going. You're going to have a fight with some of these other gods, and that's how it's going to end up. And it's a fun thing. And yeah, you can, you know, predictability is great. Doom Eternal is proof that I can replay the levels on different modes from Nightmare to, you know, Hurt Me. Was that, I'm Too Young to Die? Hurt Me Gently. And still have fun with it because
when gamers still had like a little sense of whimsy about like it's not just hardcore mode, it's like seriously, you're that much of a wimp? And you know, then one up is like you're trying.
It's still called I'm Too Young to Die.
Yeah. Gamers do have a sense of humor after all.
And I was playing these games and looking at it, and I'm like, you know, yeah, he's right. You just can't get a better experience from any other form of gaming. You can play the same scenario a dozen different times with, as long as you're playing it with somebody new or somebody who has an experience, it's like the first time you've ever ran it. You may know what to expect as a DM because it gives you a little bit more experience in that part, but the players don't, and you're experiencing it with them. So that's a unique idea. When we get too much on the nostalgia, I also want to pull it back a little bit. There's a different perspective that we can take on this one, and I think that's a very healthy one. Where, obviously, it gets toxic, as we know that.
Oh, but it can happen.
But we want to talk, just end up on this year as with our fans. We've had a year of great growth, and we hope to continue that. We want the channel to grow.
I want to mention another facet of our year in review here.
Okay, great.
Like differing mediums by which like we discuss things that have had an impact upon gaming. I mean, obviously we did the movies one to death. I was going to talk a little more about it here, but I also feel like I got the key points out, which is the system of measurement is broken.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is yelling. Most of it is about their political perspective. Nobody's paying attention to the financial mechanics of making a large movie today. Okay, that's just not a thing that they want to discuss. Everybody has a predetermined view that they would like to press from either, you know, like one political perspective or the other. I'm not really a fan of either of those. The physical mechanics of what is financially happening has changed the movie market.
Can I ask for a little bit more clarity on that? What do you think is the biggest part the financial mechanic? Is it the box office, or is it the streaming revenue, or is
streaming
it
streaming has changed everything?
Well, you're right, but
also the concept of the blockbuster has been used to disguise budgets that are intentionally obfuscated to ensure that the absolute minimum payment to outside bodies is made. That every giant super movie is going to be a loss, with the very rare exceptions. They're always like, oh, we spent $200 million on this and we only made like $198 million. Yeah, a lot of that $200 million in the budgeting is almost entirely fictional. A lot of it is unnecessary fluff.
Hmm.
And characterizing box office failure is a means to escape financial obligation to the other people involved peripherally. Like the people who get little portions of that money, they all get stiffed. However, after the long-term streaming revenue kicks in, oh, this movie made $300K. They made $100 million, and they did not pay out the royalties and shares that everybody else would have gotten if this had been declared a success.
Well, do you think the recent strikes have changed that?
I think that it will.
Okay.
I think that this is why those strikes happened. Yeah. A lot of people did not pay attention to the gritty, dirty, skeezy little details in there. But there were secrets in there that tell you what's really going on. It's not L or R, or L or C or D or R, or what political camp do you belong to. The real struggle that was going on under the surface is that the fashion by which movies are profitable has experienced a sea change over the last decade in particular. And the way in which other people got their peripheral payments for their involvement in the creation of a product, they all got stiffed. All the little people got boned and had been getting boned for 10 years, patiently thinking, well, you know, there's got to be some money in this somewhere. And the final realization was that these studios are never going to volunteer a dime that they do not have to. Does not matter how nice of a studio you think it is, they all operate on more or less the same principles. And
greed.
Like, you know, the Screen right. Actors Guild and the writers, they all had to stand up as one and say, look, we need, if this is how you configure what constitutes success, then we need to renegotiate so that we are included in a way that success for you is also success for us. To which the studios said, oh, God, no!
Yeah, we'll have AI do all our act and CGI do all our acting. Yeah, how's that working out?
Yeah.
They can't still can't get thumbs and feet right.
Yeah. which AI is as smart and useful as the creative person making use of it, which there is a lesson there for those of you who are in those top slots in Hollywood as like the executives who have never really created much of anything, but have facilitated creation by just throwing money to people.
Well,
creatives.
I would like to say like Chuck Wendig had a nice post on Twitter the other day where he talked about, the AI people saying, oh, it allows creators to want to get involved into the market. It allows them an access to it through whether it's writing or artwork without having to do the work. And he's like, well, that's exactly it. The work, the labor is the hard part. Everybody wants to be the idea man that gets in there, puts out that idea. Now, okay, you go write it or you go draw it.
Yeah.
Well, that's not work. Okay, yeah, you do need, that's a team effort, and maybe you do need an idea man to help get the project off the ground and help sustain it. But at the same time, the people who create that are so important.
Yeah, and here's a core difference. Like, me personally, got a lot of terrific ideas. I don't discuss them because, honestly, some of these ideas are, you know, I mean, reasonably valuable. They're nice concepts that I should probably work on. But the ones that have never been acted on, honestly, they involve somebody who has a skill level at something that I do not.
Right.
And the acknowledgement of that, like, oh, well, I'm the genius behind this. No, I'm not. Because clearly somebody who did, like, they went to college for this. They know how this is done. They know how artistic skills. I don't have any. I'm terrible at it, actually. Like the part of my brain that has the picture in my head cannot make that image transfer down to my hand and then express itself in any visual format. I don't have it. And I cannot seem to train it into me, despite...
Well, there you go. That's the crux of the artist, is that they're constantly tortured because their vision, what they create, as much as we like it, is still not as grand as the one in their head.
Yeah, and welcome. You know, so the important thing...
If you've created art, you understand the work that gets put into that.
Whether it's programming and coding, or video editing, or like actual art or the creation of music, I look at the other people who are the creatives who do the creating. I look at them with respect because they have something I don't have. And they're completely committed to it. And this is their labor, not just a personal love, but also like this is how they make
they're not just scamming by.
And
Dire Straits.
The perception of,
I want my MTV.
Like, there's an executive class that imagines that they are the geniuses because they've managed to give a pittance
to
somebody else down there. And in exchange for that, they've been like, somebody did all the legwork for them. Like, no, you're not geniuses.
You get your money for nothing and your checks for free.
Yeah. You know, that is not work.
Yeah,
I don't see that as the most valuable component.
Well, it's telling.
I've never once thought, I love that executive producer. Okay. Every time he executive produces something, it's so much better than like a. No, I'm talking about like you think of Wes Anderson or David Fincher or Christopher Nolan in movie making.
Or Favreau or.
John Favreau. But yeah, when you look at the creatives that are involved, they're the ones who decide.
They're the idea guys who kind of come up with the concept. Okay, let's develop this. But they're still down there in the trenches helping work.
Yeah, a director who knows how to, you know, very carefully prepare a narrative through the movie making or show making process. They're literally using the camera as yet another tool in the art form. It's not just the writing. It's not just the camera. That collection of skills made this possible. It was not the money man that made this a great movie. And those are the people who nearly have destroyed the genre that
we're enjoying. Financial officer. He's my hero.
Yeah.
He managed to screw everybody out of their royalties.
Yeah. But that is,
a lot of money this year.
If you're wondering what's ailing movie zone,
like, that brings us back
insane
full circle. Aquaman is doing pretty good.
Yeah, doing all right.
I mean, we went and seen Wonka, too. That was pretty good.
Aww.
You know, I liked that it was a prequel.
I did not need a second or third installment in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, but it's a beloved character, and other people groove on it. So,
well, yeah, but I was like, you know, it was a prequel, and I was a little hesitant about that, but they actually pulled it off. And I'm not a fan of musicals. My wife was like, did you really like it? I'm like, you know what? Not every 5 minutes there was a song. There was I knew this was going to be a musical and a dance routine, but not every 5 minutes. But I did, you know, I was ready for it. So I was like, I'm going to go see a musical today, but I'm with my wife and I'm going to have a great time.
Ah,
and that's how.
Good on you.
But I, you know, the story here is pretty good and I like it.
Yeah, I'll give you a note for
Hugh Grant as an Oompa Loompa is well worth the price of admission.
Okay, you may have sold me there. I may have to give that a glimpse. No, I want to go back to the very first one, which is, that grandpa. That guy, man, he needs the crap punched out of him. Like, you can't get your ass out of bed.
Oh,
with your, you got your starving family. Everybody's miserable. The minute the kid says, we're going to a chocolate factory, you just leap out of bed and out you go. No, you're sorry, sad sack ass. Could have been at work keeping people from starving.
Well, I understand Roald Dahl did not like that movie, but who knows? I personally, I didn't get to read the book until much later in life, but my first experience was with the movie, and Gene Wilder sold me. I can, when you mentioned
iconic.
I can never see Willy Wonka without seeing Gene Wilder now.
Yeah, we're ruined. Because if you see that first,
it's like Viggo Mortensen in as Aragorn.
It's just not nobody else.
And Elijah Wood as Frodo.
Yeah,
it's ruined. Oh,
yeah, no time for a reboot now. And that's the other thing that I want to talk about is the reboot culture and remake culture is the other thing I consider to have slowly harmed filmmaking in general, is that in the aftermath of things like reality TV, the step away from creativity and the step towards what can we demographically ensure pleases X number of people. So, you know, crap is king. And this means that if they have a metric by which they can measure people liking something, they stick with that until it has been milked absolutely dry. And that is what has happened in a recent market, is that, you know, there's just certain things you can't sell it again. And they're learning that. I think that, like, there's an awareness.
Hard lesson. Yeah, there was only.
We can't make, you know, like Sharknado 18. But if we do it for a really low budget, we can probably drop it into streaming immediately and get like a tiny kickback. Like we might make back what we spent.
You know, maybe there's room for that, but we're running low on space and our listeners have been with us on this bonus content. We congratulate if you made this far. You deserve a medal all on your own. We're almost at the end here, and we're at the end of our last episode of the year, so we won't see it till next year. Ha ha, dad joke.
I do want to talk about books in the year to come.
Yeah.
Like some very wonderful genres of books. Yeah. We've covered a lot of those kinds of things, but expect Appendix N to pop up at some point.
Yeah, I think a new Appendix N, too, because my wife has been reading the living crap out of book lists, just, you know, plowing through. I think she knew 30 some odd books this year.
Yeah.
I mean, I matched her in pages because I had like three weighty tomes of like almost 2,000 pages each.
Yeah, but you were doing, you know, like really serious, like those postgraduate level studies on, you know, World War II. So, which is not the same.
Yeah, that's not reading. There's some pleasure to be had here and there, but you got to work for it.
Yeah.
It doesn't come easy.
But we are not the same.
We are not the same. No. But yeah, I was like, I labored. She enjoyed.
She enjoyed, which, look, I when I say we are not the same, it's like she had a good time. Like you had to slog through. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm learning stuff here. My brain hurts.
I gotta write this down before it falls out to the sieve.
Yeah, it's like I got tidbits leaking out of my ears. No, we are not the same, but you both did read a lot, and I've been a little remiss. Ding ding this year.
You got it. Yeah, I think one of the good goals is to devote
I was exhausted. If I'm going to close 2023 on a note, I hate to actually, part of me doesn't even want to bring it up in the podcast, but I do like being incredibly candid. I think it's more respectable. You know, the truth is, this was a tough year. There was a lot of loss, a lot of grief, and a lot of suffering. And it did not, literally, at every turn, it seemed like another challenge. Like no sooner than I would patch over the injuries from one thing, off I would be on the next horrible event and or challenge.
Well, that's how we live life.
Hitting, and it really, 2023 hit hard at people that I love. It really beat them up. Like this was not targeted at me personally. It's like, oh, you know, like this year Mike lost a leg. No, this year large number of families that I knew and cared about lost loved ones, and it was not a tough year for me the way it was for them, but it was a year of loss. So farewell 2023, hello 2024. Let's hope it goes better.
You know, we keep saying that every year, but it never really happens, does it? And that's just how life is. A
couple of them were good.
Hey, you know what,
I'm never complication-free.
No. No, that's just like
I'm not asking for that. Just try to kill fewer people I love.
Fair enough. All right. Well, we're going to wind it up, man, this time for real. So that's it for the 2023 episodes. We'll see you in 2024. But until then,
may the dice always roll in your favor. We're out.
See ya.